we starting with this week?
Spotify update.
You got it right, champ. Well
thank
done.
You. Yeah.
Part of getting it right is saying it as terribly as possible.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to remember that for the rest almost, of this episode.
Almost unintelligible. Almost okay. unintelligible, but not okay. quite.
I don't know that update.
Yeah, perfect. So I had a look at our Spotify, and it turns out we've got 16,978 followers.
Wow.
Guys. Yeah. That's cool.
22 it's, off.
It's cool. It's not close enough, though, is it? It's not close enough to that sweet 17K.
No,
that's yeah. you're all grounded. That's where everything happens.
So I think we should hit 17K by the next time. Maybe even
17,500.
500?
Yeah.
17,000. That's asking a lot of them.
Okay. I mean, if you get us to 17,500, maybe there will be a lovely little gift in it. Yeah. No, there won't be. We can't do that.
A small party.
A small party in this new studio that we're in.
Oh, we can have like pie hats and everything.
Okay, sure. Yeah, if we hit 17.5K. If not, nothing. But
great, because Jeff and I asking. Won't know. You are personally responsible for ordering party hats for the next Spotify update.
Sure. Okay.
If there's a small transaction of around £3 or £4 on the business account, I'll know that we've hit it.
You do have access to our Spotify. You can check.
As if I'm going to.
And my question for everyone watching, get down to the comments. If you're not on YouTube, head over there and comment. What is your MTBI personality type?
Excuse me?
I don't know what that means, so I can't answer it.
Your Myers-Briggs personality
type. INFPT.
I don't know what that... Oh, that's what that is.
That's what that is.
IN something.
Good.
FP? I don't know.
Let's start the show.
That's what I just said.
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
Hi.
This week, we're talking about personalities.
Ooh.
So, you guys have heard the personality test, right? The MBTI, Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Personality Test?
Yeah, but I always forget what I get.
That's okay. Yeah. Well, you forget what you get. Yeah. Why don't we do the test? Why don't we do the test right now?
Together?
Let's all do it together. So, why don't we do that now? And maybe we'll stop the podcast because it's a bit of a long one.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back and do the rest of the episode. And if you want to see us do it, head over to our Patreon. Head over there.
/SciGuys.
I see.
Yeah. So, what is the Myers-Briggs personality test?
It's a personality test.
You're gosh darn right. It was made by Isabel Myers and Catherine Briggs during the Second World War. We'll get into a little bit more of that story later on.
Yeah.
And this is from the 16 Personalities website, which is where we took our test. It says that you can take your personality test and get a freakishly accurate description of who you are and why you do things the way you do. It's usually 93 questions. The original one was, I think, 93 questions.
Yeah.
And they talk about preference, not capability. Mm-hmm. That's an important thing to bear in mind. So this is how you prefer to do things. So you prefer to, so for, let's say, thinking and feeling, you prefer to, like, sort of, you prefer feeling over thinking. Mm-hmm. But you are perfectly capable of thinking over feeling, right?
Yes.
It's not to do with, like, sort of, you can only do these things. If you're an ENFP, you can only ever have these traits. You can be more introverted or be more extroverted. It depends.
Yeah.
And you know, everyone has the capability to use all styles, but like I said, there are preferred styles. And apparently it says it's possible for people to develop the complementary style. An introvert, for example, could learn to be more extroverted when speaking in groups. But the primary preference, the idea behind it is that the primary preference will always dominate your personality.
Mm.
And then obviously that can be modified by like things like mental illness and other things, the way you answer those questions. The way you're supposed to answer the questions, apparently, is to think of yourself in a sort of solid, neutral environment where you're feeling good. There's no mental health things going on. You're not feeling awful because of work. Like, for example, when we answered our questions, if you watched the thing on Patreon, go and watch it. When we answered our questions, I said, oh, one of mine has changed since I last took it because I now am in an environment where I want to work with other people because I like working with the people that I work with.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I didn't like working with them as much because I didn't really like my job. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. And since there were two preferences within each dimension, there are 16 potential personality types, right? So you've got the four categories with two options, introvert versus extrovert, intuitive versus sensory. So that's introvert versus extrovert is I and E. Intuitive versus sensory is N and S. Thinking versus feeling is T and F. And judging versus perceiving is J and P. So obviously those you add those together, you can get 16 different personalities. ENFP, INTJ, all of those different things. And do you know what they mean? Do you know what introverted or extroverted means?
Well, I mean, I know what I think it means, which is like whether you like being around other people and or whether you're outgoing.
So it's kind of like that. Yeah, I mean, so from one of the MBTI websites, it says the introversion and extroversion. Extroversion is essentially getting your... You prefer to be energized from the outside world, from like sort of other people and things. You sort of recharge by being around people. You share your ideas verbally. And introversion is sort of the opposite of that. You use your energy interacting with people and things, and you gain energy by spending time alone, which, to be fair, I do as well.
Yeah, I do that. I get drained by spending time with people. No offense, other people.
I mean, it depends on the people. It depends on what it's doing, I feel. I think it's complex.
It's different contexts, but generally... like social stuff drains my energy, and then being alone and thinking and stuff recharges me.
See, I feel like if I was to be around people all the time, that would suck. But if I was to be by myself all the time, at some point it'd be like, I'd want to be around people.
Yeah. You
know? So it also says that extroverts are said, just a quote, extroverts are said to react to immediate and objective conditions in the environment. Introverts, however, look inward to their internal and subjective reactions to their environment. So it's kind of that internal, external sort of thing.
Okay.
But yeah. And then you've got N and S, which is intuitive versus sensory. So people that have got a sensing preference sort of focus more on what is what you can perceive. And you are focused more on what is real, whereas the intuitive are more focused on non-objective and unconscious perceptual processes. So this would be the sort of questions where we're talking about, like hypotheticals and those sort of things. Yeah.
Interesting. Would you be able to give an example?
So from one of the MBTI websites, it says sensing people tend to process things in a step-by-step linear sequence and observe and remember specific information. They also tend to focus on the facts and what can be observed via their five senses. So instead of thinking about sort of hypothetically sort of philosophical ideas, it's more focused on, I guess, the practical, what is going on.
And is that like a different way of your brain processing information?
No, this is a different way of focusing what you tend to fall back on in terms of your way of sort of dealing with people and dealing with the world. So it's not necessarily you're thinking this is very you're thinking of this in a sort of physical brain way, which is not the best way to think of this. We'll get to that in a bit.
I just meant because you said like they tend to process things in a linear way. I was like,
not process like that, as in just process as in think about, rather than a process in any more meaningful way. And people that have got the N, like I think all of us, those are people who have a preference for intuition. Basically, you learn by seeing the big picture and themes and think about how specific information is connected. So a more holistic view rather than a sort of more practical step-by-step right the way through. So what I've read is that people that are sensing tend to focus on more on specifics of information, whereas people that are intuitive tend to look at like sort of, like the bigger picture. See things more as a whole and like gather the information there before diving in. You'll dive into something after just sort of considering it as a whole rather than thinking through each individual step.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. And then you've got thinking and feeling. And this one I think is interesting. So a preference for thinking indicates the use of logic and rational processes to make deductions and decide upon action. Feeling represents a preference to make decisions that are based on subjective processes that include emotional reactions to events. Which is interesting to me because as like, I think you and I, were we not like pretty much halfway between, I was like 53% feeling.
I'm 55% thinking.
Yeah. Very, very, very close because I feel like, I mean, I definitely, with lots of things, I would think through it logically. And again, because it's a preference, just what kind of what you fall back on, you're capable of them all. So thinking, people who have this preference tend to make decisions based on pros and cons and weighing logical consequences from an objective point of view. And people with a preference for feeling, they make decisions based on how those decisions might affect the other people involved.
I see.
Whereas I would say how it makes other people feel could be on a pro and cons list.
You can take that entire category of human and put it inside your way of doing things.
Yeah, easy. Right? Like, because this is how you do it.
What if they feel that that's reductive?
Well, I would then take a pro and cons list of what I'm doing. And I would place their feeling that that is reductive on the con side. No. That's how you do it. No. Judgment and perception, that's J&P. So those were invented by the people that made this test. And I won't get into where the test comes from in a bit. And this is sort of indicates whether rational or irrational judgments are dominant when you're interacting with your environment. So a judgmental person uses a combination of thinking and feelings when making a decision, whereas the perception person uses the sensing and intuition processes.
Sorry, I think it's prospecting.
Prospecting?
Prospecting is on the website, judging and prospecting.
I've got judging and perceiving here.
Cool.
It's
interesting.
I think I learned it as perceiving.
Cool.
I think it's,
sorry, just wanted to check.
Yeah, that's fine. So that's 16 personalities. There will be like sort of minor differences. Ultimately, it's the same idea. Uh-huh. I think it's just a slight difference in the word.
Cool.
So judging people, they sort of are list makers and planners. They have like to have a structure and schedule for their time and will sort of space out projects so they get work done a bit at a time, which... It's not me.
No, me neither.
Not you either. No. And perceiving are people that who want flexibility in their lives and how they sort of manage their time. They'd rather be open to new opportunities and events and make decisions on the fly and can sometimes enjoy working on things at the last minute or on their own schedule.
100%.
So they're self-employed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, basically. Yeah. Well, then there's self-employed people that are I've seen people I've seen someone that I know that has said, oh, I'm now taking Wednesdays off. And I'm working 2 days and then Wednesday off and then 2 days. And I'm like,
how do you do that?
How do you decide when to take a day off and not just work whenever?
I guess I could take today off.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I've got too much on my plate.
Well, it gets to like 3 p.m. and I realize, oh, well, I guess this is a day off.
Yeah.
Do people have that? Like if you're self-employed and you're having like just an awful day and you decide, right, I need to mostly recharge today. Do people who have the ability to just go, Wednesdays are my day off, do they just put aside all those anxious feelings or all those feelings that they have to recharge from until the day off?
I think, this is just a guess, do you know how when you're anxious and you're feeling awful, but there's a deadline tomorrow, so you have to do it anyway?
Yeah.
Mm. I feel like other people can just automatically tap into the have to do it anyway mode.
Yeah. I get that, but only about just before it's due.
Yeah, no, my motivation to get something, my ability to get something done is directly related to sort of how close the deadline is.
Yeah, like an exponential curve. It's like no motivation. I'll just start thinking about it. No motivation. Start. Yeah, all right. Whoa!
Oh, God.
To the moon.
It's due in 10 minutes and it needs to be done right now. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting. So the sort of data changes a little bit based on countries, apparently, just slightly. So the most extroverted country in the world is Nicaragua. The most introverted country in the world is Lithuania. The most intuitive country in the world is Tunisia. Most observant country in the world is Ghana. Most thinking country in the world is Georgia. The most feeling country in the world is Singapore. Most judging country in the world is Nigeria. And the most prospecting or perceiving country in the world is the Faroe Islands. Yeah.
Oh.
That is kind of an overview on Myers-Briggs personality type indicator, personality test or whatever. Have you guys heard of like where it came from, how it was kind of made, anything like that?
I have no idea.
No idea?
No.
I have a weird feeling it was something to do with like compatibility in the workplace or something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty close. So do you know maybe where it comes from in terms of sort of the theory behind it, where the ideas come from, as in the ideas for each of these different personality types?
Would it be something to do with like some personality types can pick up for the like lacking traits of other personality types and they work together? I don't know.
Well,
Theory?
That's kind of an idea of how it was used.
Right.
But, so where it came from is, do you know Carl Jung?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What do you know about Carl Jung?
Not very much.
No? Anything. Throw out anything you know.
He was a student of, what's he called? Freud.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They were good friends, but they fell out just before, I think they fell out near Freud's death.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that. I was listening to a long talk by Carl Jung a few weeks ago.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what? It was recorded? What?
Yeah.
He died in... he died in 1961.
Yeah.
I misread his birth as his death. So he was born on the 26th of July 1875, died June 6th, 1971, in Switzerland. So he was born in Switzerland. He was Swiss. And yeah, he was a sort of, not psychoanalyst exactly. That was more Freud's thing. I think it was basically psychoanalysis, but they changed around the word slightly, slightly different term for it. But he had the theory of individual preference, which is the idea that sort of there's random variation in human behaviors. That's actually, you can actually attribute that to fundamental differences in mental and emotional functioning, which is where the sort of personality types come from, right?
Right.
So people seem to be sort of like randomly vary in what they do and how they react to certain situations. But if you look at people based on which of the 16 personality types they are, you can then be like, ah, well, that's why this person did that. You see, that's the idea. I'm not saying that's actually what happens or actually how it works. I need to be absolutely clear here.
Yeah.
That is just an example to explain the idea behind Jung's theory.
Yeah.
Right. So, So Jung had, Jung's, while the Myers-Briggs personality test is based on Jung's work, it is not a direct one-to-one with Jung's work. So Myers, one of the people that made the Myers-Briggs personality test, described the variations as just different ways in which people prefer to use their minds rather than sort of different solid differences. So if you look more at Jung's work, it'd be more a case of sort of like, oh, extroverts are sort of wired to do this through sort of nature and nurture or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you look at the Myers-Briggs personality test, it's more a case of like, oh, well, extroverts just prefer to do this and they'll fall back on that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you can be more introverted as an extrovert. So he was the person, Carl Jung, was the person that sort of developed the idea of extrovert and introvert. He was behind that.
Interesting.
Yeah. And he also, you might remember these. He also figured out the sort of thinking, I say figured out, he came up with the thinking, feeling, sensation, and intuition as sort of different functions of the mind, which are present in the Myers-Briggs personality test. So thinking and feeling, sensation and intuition, that'd be the F and P and the N and S. And his idea was that they were more predominant in different people.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote this all down. It was called Psychological Types. Yeah, so Psychological Types, he published that in 1921. I think it was an article. It was also a book. And introversion, in sort of Jung, like the Jungian idea of introversion, is a preoccupation with one's inner world at the expense of social interactions, and extroversion as the preference for social interplay for living out inner drives. We've kind of got like pretty solid evidence for people being introverted or extroverted. At least that's what it says here, that these two types received, the existence of these two types receives empirical support from most studies of traits. So in studies looking at different traits of people, we've kind of got the idea introversion and extroversion kind of, yeah. But again, thinking of introverts and extroverts as this is the only way you can be, and introverts are all quiet, bookish people who love to learn and be interested in quietness. Mm. And extroverts are just loud, raving gorillas that smash place up and do and do parties. It's exactly. Not really how it works.
That's exactly how I see it. As an introvert, that is how I see extroverts.
See, I used to think that I was an introvert, though. But I was just socially awkward.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I didn't like...
Is it not the same thing?
It's interesting as well, because what you said there is that does kind of change... Because I never really completely identified with what I thought introvert was, mm-hmm. which is like just somebody, like you say, just like who hides at home and doesn't go out anywhere. That didn't feel true to me. But what you described there of an introvert being somebody who considers the internal of their mind and like their space inside their mind is more important than the state of the outside world. And then conversely, an extrovert is like wanting the state of the outside world to be a certain way and less focused on the internal state of their mind.
Yes, yeah, the idea is that the external, you use the external to sort of explore the internal, right? Or sort of realize the internal.
As an extrovert?
Yeah, so as an extrovert, yeah. the external is a way to live out the inner drives.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's when I asked you on one of the podcasts a few weeks ago, and then also many months ago, why you can't just be a little thing that sits on a leaf and automatically feels happy and has nice daydreams.
Mm.
That's like the introvert dream. is like, just go inside your own head and have a nice time in there. Why does the external world need to come into it?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah,
I mean, it's fair enough.
No. But to me, now that you've explained introvert, I see that line of questioning is an introvert's line of questioning.
And yeah.
It's not the only one. There is an extrovert's line of questioning too.
Mm-hmm. It kind of brings up an interesting thing that I've been thinking about a lot recently, because we keep on getting more and more comments on... Do you remember we did at VidCon, we asked a bunch of different YouTubers how they pictured things in their minds.
Aphantasia.
Where they had an inner monologue or not. I think it was really interesting because, you know, we got to speak to all of these different people. And realizing that different people have different internal worlds to you, like wildly different, like finding out that some people have constant internal monologues, other people think mostly in kind of concepts, some people can't picture anything at all, some people can picture things incredibly vividly, some people can only picture things in particular ways. It's really interesting to me that other people have such different experiences, because even when you're trying to empathize with someone, for example, with a very different sort of lived experience than you, you're considering... Usually, I would assume, you're usually considering that they have a similar internal experience to you, right?
Yeah.
Because...
So much not.
Really?
So much the case that is not the case.
I was going to say, I feel like that's something that most people assume, that, oh, this person has a similar internal world to me. Mm-hmm. Because we have lots of different sort of external experiences, right? Yeah. We have different lived experiences and we can go through different lived experiences. For example, you can live in poverty, then gain a lot of money and not live in poverty anymore. But it's very difficult to experience a different internal world, right?
Yeah.
Outside of the concept of, say, mental illness, where you can experience sort of being well and unwell. Mm. But generally, you have fairly consistent, fairly consistent levels of sort of an internal world, right?
Yeah, unless you take drugs or something.
I mean, yeah, unless you're taking drugs.
It's really interesting because I had this conversation with my partner about this, where, like, one of the things I'm trying to do in conversation as quickly as possible is figure out what somebody else's internal world is. Like, that's always been, I feel like I've always felt like I understood that other people's internal world was different between people. And I've placed more of a focus on that. So when, like, other people are having, like, small talk about their external worlds, if they're saying, like, oh, what have you been up to recently? I just am like, what information am I gleaming from that? Mm. Whereas I'm trying, like, very hard. My idea of, like, exciting small talk would be, like, finding out what the internal state of your mind is. Like, that kind of stuff would be, like,
What motivates you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's really... I think those conversations are really interesting. Yeah. And I especially love that Aphantasia episode that we did. Not just the episode, but also the speaking to all the different YouTubers there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was really cool, because I feel like the whole Aphantasia craze... While it's got people that are saying, "Oh, I've got hyperphantasia and feeling special because of it," on the positive side, you've got a lot more people thinking about how their internal world can be different to other people's. Yeah. Because what's so interesting to me is that it is very difficult to conceptualize what can be different about an experience if you haven't experienced it. Right?
Example.
Okay, so let's do an external example first, right? So someone that is very well off and very privileged. Okay. A quote from Arrested Development, right? How much, it's a banana, Michael. How much can it cost? $10? If you're very rich and you've never had to go to a shop to buy a loaf of bread, are you going to know how much a loaf of bread costs?
I know there was actually an example of that in our own government as well.
Oh, yeah.
Someone was asked how much a sandwich costs, and they were like, oh, well, I give my aide like a £20 note to get me a sandwich.
Yeah.
Someone in the Conservative
I can't remember who that was. But that's my point, right? So if you don't experience that, then you're not going to think about the idea of a sandwich going, a meal deal going up from £3 to £3.50 or £4 is not something you're going to consider at all, because you're giving away £20 for a sandwich. It just doesn't even, you can't even conceptualize that necessarily, right? Mm. So moving it back to the internal, right? So if you've got an inner monologue, and you've always had an inner monologue, and you've always got that, why would you ever think that someone else doesn't?
Well, you wouldn't,
because you think that this is the only way that thinking is possible.
Yeah.
Or if you can picture things vividly, you would think, well, how can you get by without being able to picture things? Everyone must be able to picture things.
It's like the foundation of your thinking.
Exactly.
So how can you think of a different way of thinking?
Exactly.
If you're thinking a certain way.
And the really interesting thing there as well is that if you're trying to observe other people's behavior and you're trying to understand what motivates them, you'll be thinking that their internal monologue said something, mm-hmm. which means that they did this thing. If you are motivated by your own internal monologue. Mm-hmm. I'm so fascinated by internal monologues because I don't really have one. No, when I have it come in, it's very occasional and it's very uncomfortable. And I'm like, I just want to get shut. Like, I want to shut up because most of the time I have complete silence there. Mm. And I wonder, because for I think one of the leading theories about religion is that we thought that our internal monologues were God speaking to us.
That sounds like one of those fun theories that, like, oh, that would be really fun. But I feel like it can't.
As in,
like
a TikTok. I mean, yeah. Okay, I'm going to butcher this because I don't know psychology that well. But I know that there's an idea in psychology called the child, parent, and adult mode.
Yeah.
And the child mode is like you're fun, like just trying to explore the world, have fun. And your adult mode is your sort of, so your parent mode is sort of your, in basic terms, your internalized parent. Mm-hmm. And if you had a particularly strict upbringing, then your internal parent will be a bit more strict. And then your adult is kind of the you as an adult trying to mediate between the child and the parent. Basic understanding mm-hmm. of it. Now, what I wonder is, well, if you were, for example, brought up in like the Christian church, for example, I know people who are brought up in the Catholic church, incredibly strict, and their internal parent is then much stricter. Mm-hmm. They, like the way the talking person in their head is much more critical of them. And is specifically critical in Catholic ways.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if there's any way of ascertaining whether, for example, your whatever it is, whether it's your parent mode or whether it's your internal monologue or whatever, if that's actually helpful. Because if you've got this voice in your head that you can't control talking to you, you need some way of discerning whether you should actually pay any attention to it or not.
Yeah, I suppose. I feel like, I don't know. I think it's difficult because any sort of thought about this, there are individuals who it's slightly different for, right? Because you can have intrusive thoughts as well. Mm. And it can be difficult to separate. Maybe there might be some people that find it difficult to separate the intrusive thought from the monologue because it's mm-hmm. all themselves. There might be some people who think of the voice in their head as like a slightly different person to themselves. It's weird because like sometimes in my head, I will have a conversation with myself and both parts are distinctly me, but I'm just exploring different sides of the conversation, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But they're both you and they're the same you. Are they the same me or the two yous?
I think maybe one of them is me and then one of them is a less me me. I'm not sure.
What does that mean?
As in, I'm having the conversation and there's another part of me that is me, but it's like, okay, right. If you were to cut a part of me off, right? And my hand,
yeah,
say, was like sentient. It was walking around, it was doing its own thing.
Yeah.
My hand would be me. I would be more me.
Right.
Where it feels like there's a part of me that's the consciousness and there's another part of me that must be some, it's like, it feels like maybe it's its own consciousness, but it's still me. So
I wonder if that means you're not completely integrated your mind then, if you've got like a whole separate bit of
you. It's not a whole separate bit.
Or like a little separate chunk that's just doing its own thing.
It can be separated if necessary.
Right. But then now, are we talking to all of you or is another bit of you sort of chatting away?
No, there's not another bit chatting away. There's not another bit chatting away at all.
But is all of you present in this conversation?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow. Okay, this is so fascinating to me.
It's like if you need a conversation partner, I can just have one.
You can spin one off.
Yeah, just like, you know, it's like talking to... Do you never talk to yourself?
No.
You've never talked to yourself?
Not in a two-way conversation.
Do you mean like literally talk to yourself in your head?
I mean like literally talk to yourself.
No, not like that. Sometimes I'll have a thought and then I'll just immediately disagree with it. I'll be like...
It's like that.
It's like I think of something then I'm like, why did I think of it like that? It's like, why did I think that?
It's like that, but extended.
Yeah,
it's right.
Like, yeah, okay. It's never extended. It's usually like a few seconds.
Maybe. It's like that, but extended. But so if you need to convince yourself of something, or you need to talk through an idea or something, you can like be like, oh, this and that, this and that. But instead of never mind.
If I do this, I'm just doing it in my head, and I have to go. If I'm convinced, like considering several different ideas, I have to like do it like a little tree. I have to go right. Okay, yeah. So this could be a possibility. Like one by one, oh, this could be a possibility. Oh, this could be a possibility. I can't go like, someone tell me all the possibilities.
Well, it's not like that.
Okay.
No. So this could be a possibility, but then someone else is like, no.
What? Someone else comments on it.
Not someone else. It's me.
It's just like a different.
But that happens automatically.
It's like okay, put it this way. You put a sock puppet on your hand, right?
Yeah.
It is you, but the sock puppet is a different person. But
are you doing both of those people? Or are you being you and the other one replies automatically?
Okay, I want you to view this from a perspective of I have got a sock puppet on my hand and I am talking, right? From your perspective,
yeah,
right, as the viewer,
yeah,
these are two separate people.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Despite the fact that from my perspective, I know I'm controlling both of them.
Yeah.
But in my head, I am both the viewer and the person controlling it. So I have I can experience the conversation.
This is several layers deeper than I experienced.
But are you me in that conversation? So if you,
I am both you and myself. As in, I have
and the sock puppet.
I can have your view, but I'm also fully conscious that I am controlling both of these people.
What is going on?
Never mind.
See, for me, it's usually like I'll think of something, I'll have a thought, or I'll come to a conclusion, but then I'll catch myself out on some like bias or something that I have in my head, and I'll be like, ah, no, you can't think like that, and it's not like that.
Yeah, but you have...
It's like I just switch to another thing and not like there's two things going on.
I can just keep it going for a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
For me, it's just, like a switch and done. It's not like a back and forth.
If you need to have a back and forth, you got to be able to have a back and forth.
I could switch back again.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not, okay.
You got to be able to have a back and forth, you know? You can't have a conversation be one and done.
This is the trippiest shit. This is so weird. What's going on?
Unrelated to today's episode as well.
Why can I not do this? This is a superpower.
I don't think it. I think it's just talking through something.
With yourself.
Well, it's like sometimes
that sounds to me. It's just talking through.
It's just hashing it out.
It's not like it happens all the time. It's just occasionally.
Yeah,
I'll let you
can just do it.
Next time it happens, I'll text you. I'll let you know.
Okay, I'll be sitting there being one whole person on my own without any other multiple me's, wishing I could do it.
You're barely one whole person on your own.
Well, exactly. Let alone having a few more.
I feel like the reason that you don't have any more is because they wouldn't, if you did, it wouldn't stop. Imagine two looks in a conversation.
No, it wouldn't work.
Right? No.
You'd be stuck in a room till the day you die.
Genuinely. Oh my God. I feel like if I ever wanted to torture and then, like, to torture you in any, like, no, because you'd enjoy it. If I wanted to give you heaven, I would merely clone you and just put you in a room with yourself.
Mm.
You just talk to each other for...
I don't know if I'd like that. I think I don't know. I'm just thinking of me from the external now and going,
I wonder what would happen.
Yeah, I don't know what would happen. Yeah. I feel like we'd just agree and then we'd just be like, what do we do now?
I would make sure that you had slightly different views.
Well, it's not me then, is it?
Slightly, yeah, but the same propensity for talking things through.
Just the 1% different view. And then what we'll do is we'll try and figure out the root of the tiny 1% of a sliver of difference. And we're like, why do we think differently on this?
But on every topic, there's just a tiny 1% difference in your views. Yeah. And because neither of you will have the capability of ending the conversation or coming to like some kind of compromise in the conversation, you'll simply have to talk through it forever to the end of the universe.
And I won't realize that the causality that I'm trying to find is literally just because you made it like that.
Yeah, exactly.
There is no reason. That is exhausting, but also so much fun.
Yeah, right. Like, I was like, oh, make your own personal hell. No, you'd enjoy it. So it's difficult.
Yeah.
We'll see. Once they figure out cloning to that degree, I'll make sure to get you one.
Thank you.
So the MBTI, it was made by Isabel Myers and Catherine Briggs. I think I mentioned that before. Catherine Cook Briggs, who was born in 1875, died in 1968. She was a magazine writer, and her daughter, Isabel Briggs Myers, who was born 1897, died 1980. She was a mystery novelist. Is there something that's jumped out to you about this personality test?
Writers.
Yeah.
Both writers.
Yeah. Both magazine, well, magazine writer and a mystery novelist. Yeah. And they didn't have any formal trainer. They didn't have any formal training. Now, this is usually used as a sort of way to sort of tear down the MBTI test because they don't have formal training, but then a lot of people don't have formal training. So it's not necessarily the best critique you can make of it. There are much better critiques that one can make of it. So Isabel was, the daughter was self-taught, became interested in personology, as she called it, and also psychoanalysis because her mum had an obsession with Carl Jung.
Mm-hmm.
And her mum initially wanted to make, she initially wanted to sort of talk about child development and how to raise children. So I said she was a magazine writer. So in her articles, she would talk about her obedience creativity regime, wherein essentially she would withhold affection and whatnot until chores and other things had been done, or study had been done. So basically you've got this really strict program of you need to get this stuff done. And then after that, you get sort of the praise and the kindness and warmth and play after all this strict work has been done. Apparently it worked really well because Isabel Briggs Myers was a sort of polymath by the time she was in her early 30s. Like she was just very good at lots of different things.
But was she happy?
Does that matter?
Yes.
It matters the most, I'd say.
Does it matter to have a happy child or to have a very successful child?
A happy child.
Happy child.
Well, you two are fools. And in your old age, you will be looked after by insufficient children.
Okay, as long as they're happy.
Is happiness going to take care of you when you're 90? Okay, I don't think so.
A middling between happy and capable.
I agree. I think happy is more important than incredibly successful. I think if you're not prioritizing your child's overall happiness, like throughout their life.
Yeah, and long-term happiness as well. Long-term happiness includes being competent at things.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, your child might be happy not to go to the football practice or their music lesson that day, but they won't be happy when it's sort of 10 years later and they've realized they've given up something that they could have been quite good at and enjoyed, you know? So that's where they came from. They came from a sort of background of being amateur, I guess, more than sort of professionally trained or classically trained.
Yeah.
And they were really interested in Young's work, and they wanted to. So essentially, it was the mother, Catherine Cook Briggs, who initially sort of wanted to make all of Young's like sort of more obscure stuff accessible to more people by cataloging. So she said it literally in here. Cook Briggs hoped to make Young's obscure writings accessible to the world by cataloging the character of everyone she met on index cards. And I think it was then the daughter that kind of took more of the sort of like, let's make this into a test. And the thing is, Isabel Briggs Myers, she formalized it into the test because she lost all of the money from her novels after the 1930s crash of the economy.
Oh.
Yes. Not very good.
Did she invested all in the stock market?
Well, it's probably the money from her novels was... became not as worth as much as it used to be. And it wasn't really enough to live on. Or whatever.
That's sad, isn't it?
Or the companies went under. Anything like that.
All sad.
Yeah.
Sorry. Hope she's okay now.
I thought
she's
going to say, did she invest?
So she's not okay.
She has been for.
Did she invest all in Bitcoin?
She might have. Yeah.
Look, she.
If she did, she's extraordinarily rich and dead now.
Look, she died over 40 years ago.
Wow, that's a lot of time for Bitcoin to grow, isn't it?
She's missed out on all the big jumps.
Right.
Well, unless she left it in Bitcoin.
True.
She's not going to take it out the day that she dies.
Posthumously rich.
So they then worked on that, and it kind of became a family thing that they did together. They worked on it together. They really fine tuned the test to an extent, and they ended up managing to sort of, give it to let it be used by. Or really sell it to the OSS, the Office for the Office of Strategic Services, which is the kind of thing that came before the CIA, and they also managed to give it to like sort of a lot of different places, sort of General Electric, Standard Oil, Bell Laboratories, essentially, so they could use it for recruitment decisions and employment and promotions.
Yes.
And in 1957, the Educational Testing Service began to distribute the MBTI for research purposes. And then it was kept by the ETS, the Educational Testing Service, until it was given a peer review, and a peer internal review, as in they said, this doesn't really work very well. And then they dropped it. It was then picked up by the Consulting Psychologists Press. They got the right to sell it in 1975. And then it was marketed very effectively to lots of different people. So it's a very good product that's sold. It's a test that's done. It was done, in schools. It was done in sort of workplaces. Right. Used for all these different sort of decisions because people really like the idea of being able to understand what kind of person someone is, what their strengths and weaknesses are and whatnot. And Isabel Myers apparently stated that in developing the MBTI, there was never any attempt to measure in the strict sense. And that apparently is a very surprising thing to a lot of people, a lot of psychologists, because it seems to be used to measure sort of people's, like how people are. Yeah. It was funded by family members, particularly their dad, Isabel Myers' dad, because he was a public servant and a scientist at the time. And like I said, they took the questions from Young's work and they sort of continued to sort of fine-tune it to make it a full test. The questionnaire changed over the years. Initially, it was only sort of phrase questions, mostly A or B options. And then they had word pairs. So I think that was like sort of different sort of synonyms of similar words.
Mm-hmm.
And that was to sort of get rid of context, to get rid of sort of things that would be purely situational. So, well, okay, I would only do that in that situation, but in another similar situation, I wouldn't do the same thing. And there weren't any true or false questions because If you have a true or false question, someone is might be more likely to choose true because it's more socially desirable, things like that. And really, I guess the main focus of this episode is whether it is scientific and reliable. What do you guys think?
Well, what I think is, I think there's a lot of people who really like this test and you're going to upset them.
Yeah, sure. A lot of people like horoscopes, but I'm not going to sit on this podcast and say that horoscopes are scientific. So,
but I read my horoscope and it was quite accurate, so there must be something to it.
Jamp, here's the test. Why don't you try reading my horoscope and see how you feel about that for yourself?
I think it wouldn't match up.
You sure?
Because we don't have the same star sign.
I think you should start reading other people's horoscopes as though they're your own and see how they match up.
The point is different star signs have different...
Yeah, Corey, I don't think you quite understand
the point.
You need to do some research, I think. Yeah.
I promise you that if you were to read someone else's horoscope for a while, you'd be like, oh yeah, I feel like I'm finding things that fit me.
Mm-hmm. I know you promised me that, but it doesn't mean you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, Luke. Well, actually... just got a message through about your horoscope.
Oh, yeah?
You're full of shit and shut up.
That's wow. Really funny because you could read my horoscope and you're full of shit too.
Scarily accurate.
I'll tell you what, I'll read your horoscope for a week and we'll come back and we'll see.
Please do. Okay. Genuinely, please do.
Okay. What are you again? You're Libra, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you a Taurus? Yeah. I don't know.
I am a Taurus.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
You're very stubborn.
Would you not know?
It's very stubborn, I can tell.
That's true.
It's the one thing I know about people that are Taurus. So I want to give you a quote from Carl Jung. So it says, "As a rule, only careful observation and a weighing of the evidence permits a sure classification. Clear and simple, though the fundamental principle of the two opposing attitudes may be, nevertheless, their concrete reality is complicated and obscure. For every individual is an exception to the rule. Therefore, one can never give a description of a type, no matter how complete, which applies to more than one individual, despite the fact that thousands might, in a certain sense, be strikingly described thereby. Conformity is one side of man, uniqueness is the other."
Ooh. So is that sort of saying that, you know, giving you a type as in a label, as in you are these letters, is reductive? But it's not necessarily saying that the questionnaire itself and then placing you on a scale. It's like gender and sex, right? It's not a binary, it's a spectrum, and everyone's on the spectrum of introversion and extroversion or feeling and thinking.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there are other problems. That was just what Jung said about it. And we got to remember that Jung's work was before psychology became empirical, really, mm-hmm. which is why people talk about Freud. But then kind of later on, Freud's work kind of became less influential because when you look at it empirically, when you do sort of experiments and studies and you look at data, it is less convincing.
Yeah, that's something Jung said about Freud in the talk I listened to about him, was he was saying that Freud had no interest in empirical evidence.
Oh yeah, of course he didn't. No, of course he didn't.
And that Jung actually was quite interested in empirical evidence.
Yeah, I mean, my point is more that Jung's work kind of came, that's why the introvert and extrovert thing, it's quite supported by lots of studies, right? Mm. That's why even in the five personalities that you mentioned, that's why I had all of those up and ready, by the way, in the Sci Guys Live that we did the other day. I had that ready because I'd already researched it. The five personalities that you were talking about on the Sci Guys Live episode, introvert and extrovert is one of those, I'm fairly sure, because it's pretty well characterized.
Like the five big personality traits. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Is it? It might be.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let me check.
You've got isn't that like openness to experience.
Yep, extroversion.
Yeah. Sometimes open-minded.
extroversion, sometimes called surgency. Yep. Extroversion. Ooh. Yep. Mm. That'll be where that's from. My point is, the point is less that, Jung's work is a lot of rubbish. It's just that a lot of, at that time, it was sort of empirical data in psychology was becoming more common, whereas even just Freud was not really an experiment guy, you know, which is why a lot of it's very funny that Freud's like, oh yes, everyone wants to have sex with their mum. Have you done any studies, Freud? I just assume that everyone wants to have sex with their mum.
It's like everyone's assuming. It's like assuming everyone has an internal monologue.
Yeah, no, I'm joking, by the way. That's like, we'll do a Freud episode. We'll go more deeply into it. That was a joke. Please don't take anything about Freud away from what I just said. I've got lots of different sources that have said the MBTI is not that great of a tool for what people think it is. A lot of people think, oh yes, this is my personality type. This is this is proof that this is how I am.
This is me.
Yeah. But yours have changed based on the testing. And I mean, you could say that the issue is with the test in particular. There is decent theory behind it, but there's also issues with the way that the test uses those theories. And even the 16 personalities, there are a few issues with that as well.
Even the fact that, for example, if you, like, you and I are both like halfway between feeling and thinking, pretty much, mm-hmm. and we get put in a category based on a 1% swing.
Yeah.
6% swing.
Well, but for us, if you had a 1% swing, you'd get put in a category.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And like, so for us, I think it's 6-7% between us on the F and ENF. The F and T.
Oh, wait. No.
Yeah. Is it thinking F and T? Feeling.
Okay.
There's about a 7% difference, I think, between us on the F and T, thinking and feeling. Mm. I fall into feeling, despite the fact that I think you and I tend to.
I usually fall into feeling.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. You and I are very similar in the way that we deal with some things. Mm. And it's weird that like we're now in different categories.
Yeah.
And you and Jamp are similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But not. I would definitely not say such that you're in the same category.
No.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. Because there are lots of differences between you two. So that is an issue with it, right? The categorization is that. Is such that while it's a sliding scale from like, okay, you can have like, you're like 70% this or 100% that, is then just locked into you're this.
Does it stay consistent over time? Because the big five is supposed to stay roughly consistent over time with some trends as people get older.
Well, I think there have been studies on it, on the test, actually, like people's results changing.
Yeah.
So, and people, that is a thing that people have said, that results can change. So I think the issue is that when people are sort of self-reporting this, there's too many issues with understanding necessarily the questions. And also what I was saying earlier, that you've got to answer the questions with this sort of like hypothetical, things are okay. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, I mean, if you've got really bad anxiety, for example, a lot of those questions on there are just, to me, just read as, do you have anxiety?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you've got really bad anxiety, then it's going to change if your anxiety gets a lot better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I have seen some studies that say, oh, yeah, it can change, but there's kind of a little bit of conflicting. The issue with this is that I'm looking at it and I'm getting some conflicting data on it. I want to be clear. I went into this thinking that it was a bit of rubbish, right? Because I'd seen something to that effect earlier. Mm. So there may be an issue of me picking more of the data that points to it being rubbish than the data that is supportive of it. But as far as I can tell, it generally seems that the people that just normal psychologists are, it's one of those situations, right? Where a lot of psychologists say it's not really a great tool for what it's said to be.
Yeah.
And the people that generally are supporting it are people that have some vested interest in 16 personalities. Like I found a YouTube video that was someone like defending against another YouTube video. And I went into their account and it's the dark side of ENFP, the dark side of INTJ. And I'm like, well, I'm less likely to trust you on this.
Do you have a bias, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. So just bear that in mind. But the idea, the general idea is that the MBTI test is not a very good way of dividing people. The main issue is that it's not predictive. You can't sort of... So people were using it for jobs, right? Mm-hmm. To see, oh, who should we hire? Who should we promote? You can't use it to predict how well someone will do in any particular job. You can't. It doesn't work well in that sense, because again, I think the issue is it's a case of like how people, it's a preference rather than an ability.
Yes.
So while I'm answering those questions and hitting ENFP, a campaigner, right?
Yeah.
For what I prefer to do, I could be perfectly capable. I could be incredibly capable of doing your general type. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
And in fact, I could be more capable of doing your type, say, than someone else with that type.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I would just prefer to do mine.
Even like we were saying, we were talking about questions about jobs and doing work, and we brought up even the fact that between different jobs and different situations and different settings,
yeah,
our answers would change slightly.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 It's not necessarily great. And again, this is what Luke was saying just before. Most people are close to the average, and there's fewer people that are high extremes. But when you have it's that swing there. When you have someone that's say like 98% 98% of one of the categories, and someone that's 51%, then like they're going to be in the same category, despite the fact that they're very different. very, very different. So it's just a little bit like, 16, yeah. Is 16 enough? The issue is 16 is a small amount. 16 is a great number because it's small and it's understandable. And you could be like, I'm one of these 16. And we can really easily plot it on a 4x4 graph and be like, these are all the people that there are. But it's also not specific enough.
Yeah.
It's the same as what you were saying about the gender thing, right? Mm. So, or the gender and sex. So gender, it is very easy to say male and female. You're man and woman, two genders, easy. Most people kind of fall into this anyway.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, really, if we should probably add the other one, the non-binary one. Let's just make a little sliver of the other, right? And then it's like, it's a little bit more, but you want to be more specific and more specific. And then you start splitting up male and female into more specific categories of whatever. And it's just too much. It's too much to deal with, right? You could be more accurate by being more specific, but then it becomes less useful. The issue with the MBTI is that it's so non-specific that it is not as useful as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So there's also the issue, and I was saying that there are other issues with the what it's based on. There are only four aspects of personality. You know, the big five that we were talking about before, the big five personalities. There are five of those. So do you see what the issue here might be with the four personalities of the MBTI and the fact that a lot of scientists now, when they're talking about personality tests, are using five, like a five category system?
It doesn't account for everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The issue is that one of those personality categories are going to be is basically lost.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't even think the big five are the same as the four in.
They're not the same.
Break. Yeah.
No. They're not the same. And what you can do is look at correlation, right? So I think there tends to be a correlation. So if you see a correlation between two categories, right? So if someone that gets one answer for one of the categories is far more likely to have. So people that are likely to be S are likely to be P.
Mm-hmm.
That presents
the
an
same
issue.
Category, essentially.
Not necessarily the same category, but they correlate. So it's like you're measuring something that's too similar, mm-hmm. right? And it becomes less useful. And I think I've seen studies where that has been an issue with the MBTI as well. And if we look at the science, there's not a lot of science behind it, right? So in 1991, the National Academy of Sciences Committee reviewed the data from MBTI research and noted the troublesome discrepancy between research results and a lack of proven worth and popularity. So essentially what they're saying there is the results of the research don't really seem to make sense in regards to the popularity.
Mm.
So it's more popular than it is sort of viable.
Why do you think that is?
Oh, I know exactly why it is. I left a little hint earlier on.
What was the hint?
It's a bloody product, isn't it?
But why do people like it so much? Why do people take it on free websites that they
Why do people take BuzzFeed quizzes?
Yeah, but why that one rather than other ones that are more accurate?
Marketing.
Really?
Do you think people care about okay, right. Sorry. this is not to come off as condescending at all. If you've got two quizzes, right? If you've got one on quizquiz.com.net/quiz,
yeah,
right, and it's a Disney princesses quiz, and this is the most accurate Disney princesses quiz ever. You will find out specifically if you're a Jasmine, if you're a Merida, or if you're a Tiana, or if you're a Moana. There's lots of Anas in the end. If you're an Anna, you'll find out which one
of the Anas are you.
Tiana, Moana,
I'm
Anna,
pure Anna, man,
Mulana.
Straight up Anna.
Before anyone says anything, yes, I know Meredith is from Pixar, but she is a Disney princess. Don't try and come at me.
So is Kylo Ren. Kylo Ren's a Disney princess.
Princess Leia is... Okay, right. Before someone again is in the comments, I know we're making a joke. Disney princesses are a specific branding thing made by Disney. Blah, 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 whatever.
Don't listen to Disney. So, you make your own princesses. Pick anyone from any franchise.
Lisa is a Disney princess.
Iron Man is a Disney princess.
I mean, Shuri's a Disney princess.
Harry Potter's a Disney princess.
Not Warner Bros.
Dobby, that's definitely. I know, I don't care.
It's Warner Bros.
I'm making my own princesses.
Okay,
Dobby is the head Disney princess.
Warner Bros. Princess.
Wearing a big old dress. Wearing Hermione's dress from the Yule Ball.
Oh,
yeah.
He would be, like, there'd be so much dress on the floor if Dobby wore that.
Yeah, you'd have to resize it. Yeah.
He's just magic, it's smaller.
Oh, yeah, they've got magic.
Very good.
Think about how crazy he went over a dirty sock.
Yeah.
He'd love that dress.
I know.
Master. has given Tommy a dress.
But it has to be dirty. So it has to be a dirty dress.
I mean, if Dobby puts it on, it is going to be dirty. That thing is, he is grimy. You would touch your finger against him and it would have grease all over it. Yeah. Anyway, so back to this. You've got the most accurate, the perfect Disney princesses test on some nothing, no-name website.
Yeah.
We've got a BuzzFeed quiz.
Yeah.
Which one are more people going to take? It's the BuzzFeed quiz.
BuzzFeed.
Because they've got better marketing.
Oh. Yeah. I just wondered if it was because, say, for example, the quiz is particularly good at figuring out how you view yourself, and then it kind of reflects back to you how you feel about yourself, and you feel good because you have yourself, your like view of yourself confirmed by the quiz.
Well, that is the value in the quiz. Not necessarily because it shows you what you think you are, but also if what you get on the quiz is different from the way that you view yourself, it can be useful to try and reconcile those. It can be useful in people sort of working on themselves and understanding themselves better. But it shouldn't be thought of as this is a scientific categorization of who I am as a person. And it definitely should not be used for hiring decisions, promotion decisions, absolutely nothing. In fact, I've seen some studies where they've looked at, say, people going into psychology or psychoanalysis. Yeah, psychology, I think. And I've actually got it right here. So they looked at people going into psychiatry, and based on their MBTI sort of a test, it's the same as any other thing. It's the same as the general population, the proportion of people that go into psychiatry. There's no overrepresentation of any of them. When it comes to there's this great paper from 1993 by David J. Pittinger. He's done a couple of papers on why the MBTI test is not great. So this one is called Measuring the MBTI and Coming Up Short. You always know it's going to be a good review when it's got a little joke in the title. when he talked about reliability, he said the differences between the two letter categories are not as sharp and clear cut as it would appear, because they use an absolute classification system. You've got people that are very different being lumped into the same category, and people that are very similar being split amongst categories. And when it talks about the validity, they've looked at, say, nursing and other professions, and there's been some data that's shown, these people are more likely to be nurses. Forgetting the fact that nursing is there are more women in nursing, and when you normalize it for that, it's just the same as the normal population.
Oh, really?
The distribution is the same as the normal population.
So it's more that women tend towards a certain type.
Yeah, or more. Yeah, exactly. And you look at like primary school teachers and other things like that. It's not necessarily the best for predicting how people will act. And so as a tool, a predictive tool, it is just not that at all. Mm-hmm. As a tool for people understanding themselves and reconciling that and figuring out how they deal with situations, it might be slightly better. But again, because it doesn't show what your capability is, it can't be used predictively in any sense to understand that. It can only be used, I prefer this. Oh, I prefer that.
Yeah.
You know, it is not entirely useless. But again, it's kind of like a horoscope.
Yeah,
it's got a better basis than a horoscope. Like a horoscope is mostly rubbish, almost entirely rubbish. Oof. But the horoscope is probably rubbish unless there is some data that proves that horoscopes are actually decent. And until that point, I will not believe it.
I've experienced said data. Thank you.
Hang on.
I have my own data.
No, that's not admissible.
No, no.
Don't.
Do your own research. Read the horoscope.
Yeah, but also read the other ones. Otherwise, you're just confirmation bias.
just read your own first.
And so I'll just read you some of his summary. So it says, in summary, it appears that the MBTI does not conform to many of the basic standards expected of psychological tests. Many very specific predictions about the MBTI have not been confirmed or have been proved wrong. There is no obvious evidence that there are 16 unique categories in which all people can be placed. There is no evidence that scores generated by the MBTI reflect the stable and unchanging personality traits that are claimed to be measured. And finally, there is no evidence that the MBTI measures anything of value. David does not like this test.
No.
But again, this was in 1993. He published a couple other things in 1993, and yet the MBTI test is still being sort of, it's got a very good marketing campaign.
Out of interest, are there any personality types in this test that are negative? Like, is there anywhere it's like...
All of them have their strengths and all of them have their weaknesses.
Right. Because, like, for example, when you are... Well, I guess that's kind of true of the Big Five as well. But the Big Five, for example, I can't remember all of them, but one of them is conscientiousness. Mm-hmm. And if you... And that is basically, like, kind of like your sense of duty. Like, mm-hmm. how much duty you feel like you need to carry out tasks to a good standard, mm-hmm. even if there's nothing necessarily forcing you to, just because you have your own internal motivation to do that. And that's a pretty good predictor for certain things, at least in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And reading, like I scored like medium low on conscientiousness, in part because I wasn't taking into account how obsessively I work on things I'm really passionate about when I was doing the quiz. And again, that's a questioning issue to a certain extent. But reading that is not something you'd want to share. Whereas the 16 personalities is very viral on social media. And I think possibly partly to do with the fact that it's not exactly something you would be unwilling to share your personality type.
Well, the 16 personalities quiz is great. And I think it's probably one of the better ones because it shows you percentage, whether it's accurate to the actual traits they're saying that they're measuring. Mm-hmm. That remains to be seen. I'm fairly consistent in getting the ENFP. But I think what's interesting about that is that it does give you some sort of negative things. But it's like a horoscope. Right, a horoscope is gonna like horoscopes are gonna say, oh, you know, you're good at this, you're good at that, or you're a Gemini, and you're two-faced, but you're also good at this and that. It has some negatives, but it's got a very positive spin. And the 16 personalities is very good because if we open it up immediately, the sort of result that we get, it's like, oh, these are all the cool things about you. You're great and awesome. Mm. And then it's like, look, Robert Downey Jr. is like you. Robin Williams is like you. Quentin Tarantino is like you. Russell Brand is like you.
Mother Teresa is like me.
Wow. That's
really good. I've always thought of you as a Mother Teresa sort of figure.
Thank you.
Michael Scott from The Office is like you. Spider-Man, oh Phil God. Dunphy, Piper Chapman. Oh, my God.
Apparently, I'm also like Nelson Mandela and Martin Luther King.
Well, I've always thought that.
You really do have vibes of those. Yeah, you do.
Which one?
Both,
yeah.
They're both the same person,
yeah,
right?
Thank you.
Peter Mallark. Oh, that's unfortunate. I hope it's from the books. Willy Wonka.
Ooh, Lady Gaga for me.
Ah, Lady Gaga.
Yeah, the Gaga.
But then if you go to the second tab, it then says strengths and weaknesses. So it will give you some of your weaknesses and stuff. It's just the 16 personalities in particular. It's got lovely art and it's very good at making itself seem fun to share. And it kind of back ends the weaknesses, so the negative aspects that come along with each personality type, they don't front load it, and they've got articles and stuff. And this is not a spawn for 16 personalities. I want to be clear, what I'm saying 16 personalities are good at is marketing,
branding.
Like, yeah, very good at it.
When you get your results, when you get your results, you don't just get the INFJ or whatever yours is, you also get like a name, like I'm the advocate,
yeah.
And then you get a little icon, which is mine's like a little, I don't know, it looks like a mage or a wizard.
Yeah, and it's fun. Yeah, very it's fun. It's a lot of fun. I love doing these tests. I just don't think that they're, I just don't think that they're sort of necessarily the best way of defining yourself as a person.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you know this about me. I hope I've made it clear. I despise almost all forms of categorization for people that are seen as... prescriptive rather than descriptive, right? Your personality type doesn't define who you are. The way you answer those questions, the test defines your personality type, and that just gives you an idea of how you deal with situations. And it's the same with gender and all of those things. We make up these categories, and we could make up whatever categories we want. We could measure whatever things we want. It just depends on what information we want to get out of it. If we want to get a solid understanding of how people will react to certain situations, or a better understanding of how people react in certain situations, we might use the five-factor model, or sometimes called the Big Five. If we want a fun thing to share, like a BuzzFeed quiz, we might use 16 personalities. But the issue is that the MBTI kind of presents itself as being a scientifically viable test. And I've seen a lot of studies that use the MBTI being like, oh, MBTI based on, like how people do this based on on their MBTI. But I've not seen many things that show the validity of it as a test, which is just... frustrating. So just quickly run through the five-factor model, the sort of alternative that is used more in science than the 16 personalities, the MBTI. You've got extroversion, agreeableness, conscientiousness, and neuroticism, and then openness to experience. Those are the five different categories, and you can already see how those are probably better for better for understanding how people react, better for predicting actions than understanding like how you prefer to deal with information or how you prefer to interact with people, you know?
Yeah.
Because if you're less open to new experiences, you can gather that someone is probably going to be less open to trying new stuff.
Yeah.
Which then you can see how they would react to something. Whereas if you think that someone prefers to use their feelings but is capable of thinking and using logic, then it's basically just telling you, oh, I like falling back on using my feelings, but also I am perfectly capable of using logic and I will sometimes.
And also somebody might be more capable at both than another person.
That was my point, yeah.
So you might be like, you might be, say, 30% good at thinking and 25% good at feeling. And somebody else might be 80% good at feeling and 75% good at thinking. And they're still better at thinking, but they're better at feeling, but they're better at thinking than the first person.
Yeah.
In both categories.
Exactly. It's like saying, okay, do you run more or do you swim more? Okay, well, I mean, I probably run more, but I'm pretty sure that Michael Phelps could outstrip me.
In both categories.
In both categories, yeah. Despite the fact that I would be a runner and he would be a swimmer.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just not the best way. It's not the best way of divvying people up. And yeah, I mean, look, there's lots of stuff in the description you could go and have a look at because it is interesting. And really, the issue is just that there's not much evidence supporting that it is a solid way of divvying people up or a way that can, you know, sort of divvy people up in a way that is useful, right? And I said it was a product. I just want to touch on that one last time and say that the company that sort of, I think it might have been a non-profit, but I think, let's just say the corporation, that the organization, the people that own it and sell it, CPP, they make $20 million annually
from goodness.
I think, from 2 million people that take it. And it's fine for a company to make money. And in one of the response videos I saw, they were like, oh yeah, what's the problem with them making money? That's what companies are supposed to do. My point here is not that it's bad that they're making money. My point is more that when people are making money from something, a lot of money, I'd be more inclined to be cautious about what they're saying. In that, if they're making money from selling something, I'm not going to trust them on the validity of the thing as much as I trust an independent source, you know? Because they have a vested interest in people continuing to think that that's a good thing.
That's why, for example, vaccines go through independent trials. We don't just believe the company that makes the vaccine.
Yeah.
So, because they're making money off the vaccine, absolutely fine. But it is tested by the FDA or the NHS or whoever.
And even with vaccines, right? If there was to be something wrong with a vaccine, it'd be very easily found out and it would lose them a lot of money if they did a poor job. Mm-hmm. Whereas with this test, if it does a poor job, what no one's going to be able to sue them for it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. For them, it doesn't matter. There's actually a video of a doctor that I've got in the description that he goes into more of the issues with this quite not hugely in depth, but it's a 15 minute video. It's a good watch. I would definitely recommend watching it to get a sort of decent understanding of kind of the problems with this. But I mean, generally it can be summed up that the Myers-Briggs personality, the Myers-Briggs type indicator, it's just not very reliable. It doesn't necessarily give you consistent results. It's not very, it doesn't have a good predictability. You can't use it to understand how people are going to react in certain situations. And it's not terribly accurate in that it splits people up into one of two groups for each category when they could be more similar than they are different.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, as I said, it's not all bad. It can be useful for people just sort of understanding themselves. Really, yeah. More than anything.
Because imagine what the type of person who got, say, 51 in category one, 48 in category two, 53. Imagine they were like bang in the middle for everything. Mm. And they get given a label despite the fact that they were bang in the middle of every personality. Yeah. That'd be such an interesting type of person because they don't fit into that category, really. The system isn't designed for them.
I mean, one other thing is that if you were to look at another, I feel like if I was to look at either of yours, I could probably pick out some things and be like, oh yeah, that's me. So there might be a bit of confirmation bias there as well when people are looking at what it says about their categories.
Mm-hmm. Tell you what is interesting about 16 personalities though, is if you then go and read the other people, it's like, for me, it was like, oh my gosh, it was like we were talking about the internal world or the internal minds. You read about these people who you're like, wow, that is nothing like me. Mm-hmm. And that is fascinating that somebody goes around and that's their natural state. Yeah. And it's just nothing like anything that I can recognize in myself.
Yeah, I think it's useful as a jumping off point, as a conversation starter, as a way to, or as a way to deeply, more deeply sort of introspect about yourself.
Mm.
I don't think it is... I don't think it's an end point. I think it's just a jumping off point, you know? And that is...
a gateway drug.
Yeah, no.
Into psychology.
Sure. And that is the Myers-Briggs type indicator. Here we go. Thank you all very much. But it's not the end of the show quite yet. But one more thing to do.
Yeah.
It's time for the quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Personality edition.
So you all know the rules of the quickfire quiz. I ask you one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after I finished asking the question wins. What do they win, Jamp?
Nothing.
Gosh darn right. Yeah. Just like what the MBTI tells you about who you truly are.
Nothing.
Sick burn. That's not necessarily true. But what is true is that I've got a question for you. My question is, who invented the Myers-Briggs personality type indicator test?
Dink.
I didn't ask you for your buzzers, but Luke got it.
Oh,
Luke.
Yeah.
That
was my buzzer at the beginning.
Funny. That was really funny. Good.
At the beginning of the show.
I need their first names.
Man.
I need their first names.
Man.
You're just saying Myers-Briggs.
But at the start of the show, Jamp answered in a funny voice.
Yeah.
And he got it right, apparently.
Yeah, so because
it's only when I do it.
Because it was a funnier voice than you. You still have to get the question. You still have to get the answer right.
Myers and Briggs.
Yeah, but what are their first names?
Mrs.
Mr. Myers.
Okay, right. Mrs. I will give you a point if you tell me. Okay, back to the start. Right. What are your buzzers?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. I will give you a point if you tell me once I finish saying this, you got to buzz in. Which one was the mother and which one was the daughter?
Oh.
Yeah.
Luke.
Well, tell me both their names, and I'll tell you which one was the mother and which was the daughter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Their names were...
That's giving it away.
Myers and Briggs.
Briggs was the mother.
Okay. Yeah, you got it. Ding, ding, ding. The correct.
Oh, yeah.
I would have got it wrong.
Isabel Briggs. I think it was Isabel Briggs Myers and Catherine Briggs.
That's it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, there you go. Well done. Fantastic.
Thank you.
That's the end of the show, isn't it?
That is, yeah.
Oh boy, dearie me.
It's usually where we end it.
But yeah. If you enjoyed this episode, you want to see us do the test, which was a very fun little affair. You can head over to our Patreon.
Patreon.com/SciGuys.
You can also get a lot of other stuff over there. Like you could get bonus videos, you could get SciGuys Live all the time. It's a live show we do every 2 weeks. What else can they get? Get votes, topic votes.
You can vote on things. There's bonus clips. There's all sorts going out.
Oh, God. And there's also a brand new tier with a brand new show, SciGuys After Dark, where we just...
Oh, my goodness.
Just chat about stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's like a whole other podcast.
It's amazing. Monthly podcast just for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is it. But we're going to go now, I think. Anything else you guys want to say?
No.
That's fine if it's a no.
No.
No? Okay, good. Because before we go... We would like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Ashley Miller and Finn TZ. And also, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.